Takes me like 2 minutes to break shit. Damn. Hi, everyone. My name is Martin. I'm an addict. I am so incredibly happy to be here. Thank you. I'm living, like you just heard, I live up in Northern Canada in the Yukon Territory, but I'm originally, my mom is actually from the other end of Lake Champlain, Canada, like right across at the other end of the lake. I was raised in this area, like in the Ottawa, Montreal area. This is my playground. I found God here, man. I found God in New England early in recovery. These mountains around us, the Green Mountains, the Whites, the Adirondacks, is where I found it, is where I found God. And when I was asked to come here, I was so incredibly happy to come back here. And thanks for welcoming me home. You know. I spent about 18 years of my recovery going to an event every year up down in Lincoln, New Hampshire called Dopes on Slopes. It's a ski event. If my dopers are here, you are my people. If you haven't been, it don't matter if you ski or not. If you haven't been and you want to watch 200 recovering addicts enjoy life to the fullest, go do it. It's worth the detour. And it became a touchstone in my recovery very much. Again, this area means a whole lot to me, and I'm really, really glad I'm here. Something else I have to say, there's a man in this room who I met on my online home group during the pandemic. He's from New Jersey. I live in the Yukon. Our home group was in Grants Pass, Oregon, okay? So I've been sponsoring this man for 2 years, and I met him in person yesterday for the first time. We worked his steps online. We did his fifth step online. We talk about service online. Right now, him and I are sitting down and we're reading a chapter of Living Clean every week and just live, you know, we meet on Zoom every week and it fucking works, guys. It works. And as much as the pandemic was crazy for everybody, it did something to our fellowship. And it connected us in a way that we weren't connected before. I live in isolation. I live in a town of 900 people. I'm 100 miles from where the nearest meeting is. My home group is 100 miles away. You know, and but I can log on to Rogue Redwood every night and get my recovery, and the pandemic did that. I didn't know. I mean, I was living up there and doing the 100 miles, and I still do because my partner lives in town, and, you know, I still do, but having that connection, you know, and if, dude, we were doing this before companies were doing this on Zoom, man. Like, we figured this out within minutes. Because we're resourceful, intelligent, beautiful fucking people, aren't we? I guess I gotta give you guys a bit of a disclaimer. I'm lucky. I was raised French. I was raised in French, but I learned English early on. I was married. I got yelled at by my wife in Spanish for 10 years. So I speak two languages well, one enough to get arrested. But I also speak a language that we all speak here, and it's the language of Narcotics Anonymous. Now, some days that language is very clean and nice, and I've been working on my character defects and my F-bombs, but if I drop one once in a while, I'm really sorry. Just so you know, I've been working on it, so if I... But I'm in New England, man. F-bombs are just... And in my line of sponsorship, fuck you means hello anyway. I'll tell you guys a bit more about that later on, but yeah, so I've been working on my language. And before I really get into this, and there's other people here, there's Max, Shay, I don't know where the hell you guys are, but that hug was the best thing ever, guys. Max and Shay are also part of my home group in Oregon, and it was my first time meeting them today. I've watched Max and Shay get clean on the screen. I was there since day one, and I'm so happy to see you guys in the room, alive and free and clean and involved and part of all of this. You guys saved my life for 4 years. You know what I mean? This could have all fallen apart, and we kept it together. And we get to celebrate this in person today, and it's great, you know? One of the things I do want to say before I really get into this is I want to thank the committee. Give your committee a round of applause, please. I'm lucky to have had contacted the committee. It was great when they called, but you know, the person that called me was the hospitality chair, Lisa. And she goes, it's because we don't really have a programming chair right now. And this is kind of a ragtag thing that we're doing this year, and we're trying to put it together. And dude, this is about, on that committee, there was about four people. Okay, this convention is a result of four people working for a fucking year to make this happen. Okay, now this is what I'm gonna tell you. If you're here on a newcomer package, nothing's free in this world. The seventh tradition doesn't mean that you need to have money. The seventh tradition is about self-support, and if you can't pay for your ass here, you'd better get your ass to work. Give an hour to this fucking place. Give an hour to this place. If you live in this area and you're sponsoring, ask yourself, why are my sponsees not on this frickin' committee? You're damn right it's old school. See ya. You're gonna hear a lot of old school shit. Recovery's changed, okay? I'm gonna tell you right away, recovery has changed. It's great. It's evolved as we evolved as a fellowship. We have new literature. I got clean on the basic text. I got clean on the basic text and photocopied step guides. Vito's guide. Everybody had Vito's guide. You know, because Vito had about 98 sponsees and was tired of saying the same shit. And just I decided to put this stuff together. If you don't know Vito, you're here because of Vito on the East Coast. Just to let you guys know, he's one of our founding members. And he was one of the very... Okay, here's the thing. I'm going to be up here and I'm going to say a lot of cool shit, okay? Hopefully. You got to know that I'm a cover band for all the predecessors. There's not a lot I'm going to say up here that's original material. But plagiarism's okay in recovery. It's kept me clean for 28 years, and hopefully it'll keep me clean for 28 more. You know? Yeah. I do that. There's stuff I do I shouldn't do. I get nervous. If you haven't spoken, the ones that have will know what I'm talking about. I speak for a living, and it still happens to me, whether I'm at work or whether I'm here or whatever. There's the speech you're going to give, the one you give, and the one you should have given. Committees should not call you 3 months before it's time for you to speak. And I decided on my way here, like, fuck it, I'm on a bus, I might as well listen to a speaker tape. And I shouldn't do that. Because I happened to, and again, old school people will know who I'm talking about, I happened to stumble on one of Gina B's speaker tapes. And I know Gina, you know, and it's just like, I'm a piece of shit and I'm never gonna amount to anything because I'm hearing all these like amazing NA speakers, you know, that influenced my recovery so much. And I'm like, how can I live up to that? And then it came to me, you know, I was meditating yesterday and I said, I don't have to. You don't have to live up to your sponsor. You don't have to live up to the other guy who shared, because what you need to share needs to come from the heart. And Like, I have a spiel. I can come here and give you the spiel. I can do the spiel. I do the spiel. There's some conventions I go to and I do the spiel because... But, dude, I'm home and I was thinking about this and I don't want to do the spiel today, dude. I want to talk to you guys about my recovery and the spiel might come out, whatever. It's not me, you know? But, yeah. I'm in transition. I'm in recreation right now. I'm 28 years clean and my life is completely changing again. Everything is changing. The last 5 years of my life brought me to a point where just for today made sense. And I'll explain why, hopefully. I'll talk about that. And I have a son. Let me just talk. I'll try to put it out there. I have an 18-year-old son. And when that kid was 13 years old, he was having trouble at home. I was a bit of I was married in recovery. I got divorced. There were moments in my recovery where I was extremely self-centered. I'm not going to lie. Listen, man, I come up here, and you know, there's somebody in the back of the room. I know that I signed my first convention. There's somebody in the back of the room going, that guy is a spiritual giant, you know? And believe me, I'm not. I'll make it sound good, but really, at the end of the day, I've made nuclear-level mistakes in this fellowship. Nuclear-level mistakes. One of those mistakes was, well, I don't think the divorce was a mistake, but one of the mistakes that I made, one of the most selfish things I did in my life is I walked away and I gave my rights away for my children. With, like, open custody, if I could, I could see them. But the thing is, Martin was busy. Martin was self-centered, and Martin didn't really see his kids much for 12 years. I was the weekend dad, I was the Christmas dad, I was like the cool guy. And I developed a relationship with my children, but it wasn't a relationship that was, I have three sons, 14, 18, and 21. None of these kids have ever seen me high. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, very cool.
You know? And all my kids in recovery. So anyways, I was a selfish man. And 5 years ago, this kid was taken out of his house after an abuse situation with his stepdad, and he was taken out of his house, and he was supposed to go to foster care for 48 hours, a respite, 48 hours to give everybody a break. 9.5 months later, he was still sitting in foster care. And I got pissed off. And I was talking to people, I was talking to my sponsor, I was talking to a few people when the 11th step kicked in. And what the 11th step told me is, Martin, step the fuck up. So in June 2020, we all remember June 2020, don't we? Montreal is the hot spot in Canada. I live in the Yukon Territory where it's nice and safe because we're a small population. I hop on a plane, go to court in Montreal with a face behind plexiglass, in front of a judge with masks on our face. And the judge said, and my ex-wife brought everything up. I met my ex-wife at 3 years clean, but she brought up my addiction as a way to me not to get my kids. She said I was going to be an inadequate parent. She said that I have multiple sclerosis. You guys might have seen me walking around with a cane, okay? She said, because he's, you know, and then the doctor goes, are you still using? I said, sir, I've been clean for 28 years. He's like, congratulations. He says, how's your health? I said, I will dance a jig for you right now. He says, when can you take your kids? And when can you take this child? And I pulled out two plane tickets, and we were on a plane 24 hours later, and I brought him back home with me. That was the most anger-inducing, frustrating, insecure, confusing, chaotic, most beautiful 4 fucking years of my life. My child has special needs. He has Tourette's syndrome, and he's diagnosed OCD, like medicated solid. He's got oppositional disorder, so it wasn't always easy. And we went at it. I'm not going to kid you. I will not win any trophies for Father of the Year. But I talked to my kid today. He's in Toronto at Ryerson University in social science, and we did this. We did this. And they say medicine, religion, and psychiatry, you know, none of these methods was sufficient for us. It's not that they don't fucking work. Because if it wasn't for psychiatry, if it wasn't for medicine, if it wasn't for counseling, if it wasn't for everybody out there tag teaming this kid and all being on the same team, that kid would not be where he is today. Because I am humble enough today to understand that I don't know everything. And to tell you the truth, I'm trained as a special education teacher. But when it comes to your own kid, I'm real good at raising yours. But when it comes to my own kid, that shit went right out the window. And I needed help. And I got the help. And my kid is in Toronto on his own studying right now. I flew into Montreal to stay at my other kid's house. And I walk into the apartment, and he's got three roommates, and the place is an absolute mess. And he's like, "Dad, it's super messy." I'm like, "I'm so goddamn proud of you, kid." Like, I was like just so happy to see my kid. He's a man, you know? I have two young men and one that's coming up, and it's not perfect. My son self-medicates a lot. But my son knows where I'm from. He knows where I am, and he told me himself, he says, "When that day comes, if it comes, Dad, I know where to find you." You know? And in the meantime, I just got to let that boy fly. Because nobody dragged me in here. Because I can get dragged in here, and some of us got dragged in here. You know, some of us came in on court orders. But at the end of the day, you either stay after the court order or you go home. You know, and if you stay after the court order, that's your choice, right? And nobody will keep you here if you don't want to be here. No wife, no husband, no partner, no child, no job. Nothing will keep me clean until I decide that this is what I need to do. You know? I could spend some time here talking to you guys about my past, telling you war stories, telling you how I got here, but really at the end of the day, all that shit is between me, God, and my sponsor. Because we all come here the same way. And I don't care how you make it look. You can be wearing a suit, you could have a pretty dress, you could have an 8-inch mohawk like I did. Yeah, showed up, I had hair. It doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, we all come in the same way. We all come in scared, desperate, and pathetic. I'm sorry if that hurts. But we all come in the same way. And that's what matters. And it was said earlier, we lived in fucked up times right now. We live in fucked up times. But see, I don't have to talk to you guys about my political views. I don't have to talk to you guys about who I sleep with. By the way, if you know, you know. If you don't worry, I'm not coming after you. And if that's a problem, call your sponsor. I don't care. Because I have friends that have very, very, very different political opinions than mine. I have friends that have very, very different orientations than mine. I have friends that have very different lifestyles than mine. But at the end of the day, we're all united in one thing, is that we're trying to get our ass out of shit and we're trying to stay clean just for another day. And how, so we can park all that shit at that door right there. It doesn't matter. Because if I... If I look at you and your policy, your politics, or the way you dress, or everything, is stopping me from hearing the message, I might be dying. And my sponsor told me that early on when I came back and I got my new sponsor. He said to me, that's one of the first things he said, and you want to know, you said old school, listen to this shit. My sponsor poked me in the chest and he says, Martin, he says, I will sponsor you, but this is what you need to understand. If I hug you and I pat you on the back when I should be turning you around and kicking you in the ass, I might be fucking killing you. Because that's my responsibility as a sponsor today. Because that's my job. My sponsor holds me a call down at bowling, calls me on my shit. My sponsee brothers call me on my shit. My sponsees themselves call me on my shit. Two of my sponsees have over 15 years clean, and I don't know who's sponsoring who half the time. You know? And like I said, fuck you in my line of sponsorship means hello, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing. I came in here and I was coddled. My sponsor told me that. I was living off my parents when I came in here. You know, my parents paid for everything. My parents ignored what was going on. They didn't want to know. You know, and I could hide it pretty, not at the end, but I could hide it for a while, you know. And just mom never wanted to know. She doesn't want to know, you know. So my phone bill was due. My rent was due. If I get evicted, she'd pay. You know, I'm one of these lucky people that... See, I can tell you this. I wasn't raised on the street, man. And that's okay. I hid that for a long time in recovery because I didn't want to... But give me long enough, give me the hour, I'll make myself the biggest, baddest motherfucker you've ever seen. I don't need to do that. What I'll tell you is I was born in rejection. I was born, I met my biological family, I met my biological mother, I was a year clean, you know? And what I figured out when I met my biological mother is that my dad is probably Jack Daniels, or a Russian guy called Smirnoff. And my mother died from this disease. I have a biological brother that's been in jail most of his life because of this disease, and I have a biological sister that quit using 30 years ago because of this disease. So I come by it honestly. Whether or not I was raised with these people, I come by it honestly. You know, and whether or not that, you know, they always talk about nature or nurture, I don't know anything about that stuff. But I met my people when I met my family, I'll tell you that much. And my family wasn't like that, but I was raised in expectation. I was raised in with a lot of shame and a lot of secrets and a lot of stuff I couldn't talk about and a lot of what the hell is wrong with you. And the shoe didn't fit. The shoe didn't fit. Because I knew stuff, kind of, I had stuff, and I'd fight back, and I'd do stuff. And my mom, as I love my parents, you know, they were some, they did what they could, man, and we are products of our environment, and I've heard it said before. We don't get along with our parents all the time. And my parents did the best they could with what they got, because they're the product of their own family. And we have filters, eh? Sorry. At Dope Song Slopes, they call me Frenchie, like I'm the token Canadian there. But we have filters, right? So my mom said stuff, and I heard stuff. But between what my mom was thinking and what came out, what I heard at the other end, what translated and when I was a 10-year-old kid, my mom probably in her head was going, Martin, I love you to death and I want the best for you. What I heard out of her mouth is, what the hell is wrong with you? By the time it hit my ear as a 10-year-old kid, it was, you're a piece of shit and you'll never amount to anything. And that's stuff I figured out in my fourth step and stuff I had to deal with in my eighth and ninth. Because what I realized at one point in my life when my mother was dying, the only thing I should do, I'm going all over the place today, but the only thing I could do with my mother when she was passing away is to be there. I owe my parents hundreds of thousands of dollars. I broke shit. I stole shit. I have an 18-year-old kid that's very similar to who I was, and I know how much trouble it was for 4 years of my life. Okay, and I can just imagine today I'm paying for my sins, I guess. But what I figured out is, you know, if your parents are still alive and you have amends to make, the best amends you can make is show up. Show up. Be there. Because by the time my mom, because I would be 40 years old, man, and my mom would say something to me and I would turn into a 6-year-old child. Okay? In the last 9 months of my life, what I figured out is all my mom has been trying to say to me all these years is, I love you and I want the best for you. And once I figured that out, we got good. And my mom passed away and we were good. My father and I had an amazing relationship, and he was my hero and my mentor. And on the day before he died, I went into the hospital, and he was on his bed, and it was the first time in weeks that he was, like, somewhat conscious and lucid. And he grabbed my hand, put it on his chest. And my dad was the most Christian man I've met. And by Christian, I don't mean religious. My father really embodied some principles. And I'm not saying, I'm not a Christian man myself today, but my father embodied principles. Just to give you an idea, my father died at 77 years old and there's 350 people in the room. Okay, that gives you an idea of the kind of man that he was. And I walked into that hospital bed, that room, and my mom says, I'll give you a minute. You know, and we knew he was gonna go the next day. He grabbed my hand, and he beautiful green eyes that my father had, and he held my hand to his chest, and he's like, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry." And I'm like, "What are you apologizing for? What are you?" But you know, he felt the need to. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we just stared at each other for a minute. And I said, "I love you, Dad." And he just looked at me and closed his eyes and said, I love you too, in whatever voice. And I gave him a kiss on the forehead and I walked out. And my mom says, is there anything else you want to say to him? And I just smiled and I said, we're good. We're good. What a gift to be good with your family. What a gift of recovery to be good with your family. What a gift of recovery to drop my kid off in Toronto. And we do this weird thing, my kid and I, and we've done it since he was a kid, and it was like tap that bump. Is this little handshake that we do? And I mean, he's 18. We hadn't done it in like a year because it's like most of our conversations are like, go fuck yourself, Dad. You know what I mean? Whatever. And I dropped this kid off in Toronto. We spent 3 days of absolute nightmare trying to get his room organized and everything, and all of a sudden I have to fly out the next day, and you know, I give him a hug, I say, I'm so very proud of you. And then I'm about to get in the Uber, and Eric goes, Dad. And I turn around, and he puts out his hand. Tap, tap, bump. And he goes, it was fun, Dad. That was the biggest thank you I could have ever gotten. That's worth 4 years of police coming to her house, him destroying my TV, him and I, you know, and I told my kid, I'll never go at you, but kiddo, I have 30 years of scrapping on you, you come at me, I will mount a convincing defense, you know, and it happened, and I'm not, and the people in my online home group saw me in tears coming that my son and I had just gotten in a physical altercation that comes at, that, cops had come to my house, and then I had to lay my kid out because he was coming at me with a weapon. I love that kid. And it's hard. And it's hard as a recovering addict to behave like that. But at the same time, it's what it was. There's people in this room, you'll get this. I'm 28 years clean. I don't know shit. So I have 5 years. There's people in this year are 5 years. He's like, you know everything at 5 years clean. You figured this shit out. Wait till the countdown tomorrow. Because you see people with, I'll go backwards. You see people, newcomers are like, everybody celebrates the newcomer, you know, and there's people with 30 days, yeah, 90 days, yeah, 1 year, yeah, 1 year is, yeah, yeah, because I'm no longer in the days, you know. 5 years, it's like 5 years, and I'm holding it like a badge on my arm. I got 5 years clean. 10 years, you're starting to get it. Just wait till the end, when the people with, just wait till you see, and you know, because by the time I'm 10 years clean, I was starting to get it, and I was starting to understand that, wow. I mean, there's just wow, and I think that people with that kind of time understand what I'm talking. Just like, whew. My sponsor told me at 10 years clean, this is a stay or go moment, dude. This is it. You're either here for life or you walk out this door right now, you know? And he says, if you're going to stay, your role is going to change in this fellowship. Well, I'm going to tell you, if you have time, you know what I'm talking about. We have a job to do in this fellowship. And my job is to keep that door open and to make sure the guy coming in gets to talk to the guy with 90 days that he'll get, he'll understand a lot better than me at 28 years clean, because I'm the old guy now. I'm the weird guy. Gina said it on the tape. We're the weird middle-aged creeps in the room, you know? But I became a weird middle-aged creep because I walked in here at 28 years old having overdosed and almost, like, pretty much dying on my bathroom floor, and this is why I get to be a middle-aged freak to talk to you guys about my kids today. And if you're new here, welcome to the human race, man. Because this is what this program's all about. I'm going back to that right now. I've shut this parentheses and let's go back to the real shit. So I'm not going to talk to you about my past. All I can tell you is I overdosed and died. The guy that was my dealer was someone I'd met in Narcotics Anonymous. Okay? I'll tell you one thing. If you ever relapse, do not use with someone you met in the rooms. Because about halfway through your high, you're going to start talking about meetings. The people laughing know what I'm talking about, don't you? And here's the thing, guys, if you're new here and this is your first convention, if you're in your first 30 days, and even if in your first 3 months, if you get a glimpse, a tiny little sliver of what's going on in this fellowship and what we have to offer here, we have fucked up your using forever. We have fucked up your using forever, because that's exactly what you guys did to me. Because I came in here at 18 years clean to avoid more charges as an adult. Cash checked myself into treatment. I stuck around for a few years. But all I did for those few years, I was too pretty, I was too young, I didn't use the right drugs. I was more interested in girls and sex and everything else. And I would come in here and share clean and live dirty. And that will catch up to you. And all these people I was in the rooms that we were going, you know, coming to meetings and then going to clubs 3 nights a week. We were the clean ones, the designated drivers. But we were still feeding our addicts, man. And trust me, you can get high in these rooms without ever picking up a drug. But you do that long enough, you hang in a, I'm a cover band. You hang in a barbershop long enough, sooner or later you're gonna get a haircut. Okay, and that's what happened to me. And I went out, and the shame, almost immediately, the shame, the guilt, the baggage I was carrying for you motherfuckers being in my head killed me. Literally killed me, because I could not just be high anymore. Because I had to shut it off. just shut it off. Pour me through a keyhole, blackout, shut it off, because if I had a thought, my thought was shame, my thought was, and it was you guys, man. You killed it for me. And I came back and I didn't want to be here. I came back because this was the last fucking house on the block, folks. This was it. I didn't want to be here. I was a little punk ass. I didn't want to be here again. I hated you guys. And why would I be here? It didn't work the first time. Because I was trying really hard. I had a sponsor the first time, apparently. You know, at the time, you know, in my area, there wasn't a whole ton of clean time, and he had 3 years, and he was a god. He was a sponsor everybody wanted. I never called the guy. Although the day I overdosed, I remember his phone number. The next day, somehow, I'd been out of the fellowship for a while, but somehow I remembered Ross's phone number, and I called him. I thought I'd get his answering machine. And he picked up. Bastard. And he's like, hey, Martin, I thought you were still away. We haven't seen you in a while. And I'm like, Ross, I've been using, blah, blah, blah. I tell him all this stuff. I just overdosed. I'm messed up. He was like, where do you live, Martin? And I give him my address. He says, funny, I just moved a block and a half away from where you are. He's like, stay where you are. I'm going to pick you up, and I'm going to take you to a meeting. That was March 24th, 1996, and I haven't used since. That man didn't stay my sponsor. I needed to change when I came back. But Ross would come to my celebrations every year, and he would sit in the back, and we'd give each other a hug, and all I had to say to Ross is thank you. And Ross understood. Ross passed away. He was a super important member of our fellowship up in Canada. He was really, really involved in Canadian recovery is what it is today because of men like Ross. Those people that work in the shadows in Narcotics Anonymous, but that make it possible for all of us to be in rooms like this. And that man means a lot to me. It was a big loss for our fellowship. But he died clean, you know. I got a new sponsor, and that's what he said to me, man, when I got that new sponsor. He said, if I pat you on the head when I should be kicking you in the ass, I'm going to fucking kill you. You know? And that's the truth. And that's the school of sponsorship I'm from. And my sponsor had me read this book from cover to cover, or cover to the stories, you know? Because that's how we did it. Got the book, and you got a dictionary, and you got a pen and paper, and you just did it. However you could. And we're blessed today to have our own literature, and we don't have to go hunting for it. You know what I'm saying? Because we went where we could, and if it meant going to the Oz over there, we found our literature where we could. I'm not an anda today, by the way. I'm not an anda. I'm not an andic, an addict anda. I'm an addict. Period. This is my language. This is what I spoke. This is the fellowship I discovered and I chose. And this is a fellowship I have been in since day one. Because today, we are a strong enough fellowship that we do not have to go anywhere else for recovery. You know? So let me read this book, man. And I mean, you read these readings, and you know what I figured out, folks? If you haven't figured it out, I'm going to tell you right now everything you need to know you've learned in your first 30 days of recovery. And it happens in the first 5 minutes of our meetings. Our readings tell us something that's very important. And it tells us, sorry, I just have to find the right one. I know where I am, shut up. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly. This is a program of complete abstinence from all. It is the only one requirement for membership. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. One of the most important lines in the basic text, I had come off a relapse, and my sponsor was like, you need to sit down and you need to learn some shit. Read this. Read Relapse and Recovery. He had me read Relapse and Recovery every day for a month. And there's a line that came through in that book. He says, let's read line page first, you know, the last line of page 70, the first paragraph in page 76. You know what that line says? We have never seen a person that lives the Narcotics Anonymous relapse. That lives the Narcotics Anonymous program. Not that goes to meetings and talks shit. Not that has pen to paper every day writing steps without it connecting. Who lives the program of Narcotics Anonymous? I spend about, my home group's an hour and a half long. So maybe overall, even if I'm online, I spend maybe 4 hours a week in Narcotics Anonymous, in meetings. What do I do when nobody's watching? What are you doing when nobody's watching? Is this coming into your house? Is this coming into your family? Is this coming into your finances? Here's one that will make your sphincter slam shut. Is this coming into the bedroom with you? Because if God isn't in my relationships, I have a fucking problem. The few people that are going to be calling the sponsor about it, though. Yeah, some people are cracking up over there. You know, but it's true. I have to bring God in. And I don't care who you sleep with. I don't care if there's, like, you know, chains hanging from the ceiling. I don't give a shit. If you know, you know. Shut up. But God's there for me today. And whatever it looks like in that private space, if God's there, it's all love. It's all love. And it doesn't matter who I'm with, it's all love. And if my relationship is love, my relationship is going to be communication, my relationship is going to be respect, and my relationship is going to be my partner, is my biggest cheerleader, and I love them to death. And they've allowed me space to come to this place to change. And when I mean change, it's not only with my kid, it's everything. I lived in... I'm going to do it. I knew, young, those who don't know, I knew young, but I couldn't know. It wasn't right. So secrets, shame, confusion, judgment of self, battle every day. Moving on in life, going through high school in the 1980s, where everybody that was in my community was a fucking death dealer. Because of this nice little virus that killed so many of my friends. And I knew. I got into recovery. I knew I had a sponsor who was gay. And he's like, Martin, you might not be gay, but you're certainly not straight. Now you know. Shut up. I'm 52 years old, I came out at 44. I don't talk about this because we're not here to talk about politics and religion and whatever the fuck. I'm getting on my meat. But this is part of my story and it's something I've never shared. I think I'm safe to share it here. And Last year, I went on my own in the city of Whitehorse, in the middle of Yukon Territory, in the middle of nowhere. I went by myself because my partner wasn't available, and I chose to walk in the Pride Parade by myself for the first time last year. And do you, man. And I mean, like I said, if this scares you, I'm not coming after you. But no one is safe. Oh, shit. I'm just having fun. But, you know, it's such a change in my life. It's such a freedom, and it's so confusing and weird and a new world that I don't understand, that I'm probably too old to understand. I don't understand the language. I'm just navigating new shit, man. Like, we navigate shit, and that's one of the beauties of recovery, man. We get to recreate ourselves. We need to navigate shit. We need to get to do stuff and make mistakes, and but we stay clean, you know? And you know, there's this guy in my home fellowship back, and our fellowship where I live is super small. It's 3 meetings a week. I've been hanging out with one guy in my home group for the last 3 months waiting for a newcomer to come through the door. It's me and the other dude, you know? But there's a friend of mine that is there. His name's Bill, and he said something at a meeting. I live in one of the most beautiful mountainous places in the world, and Bill said something at a meeting, and he was pretty new at the time, and he said, look around us. He says, and think of this place. He says, look at the mountains, look at the lakes, look at the rivers, look at everything. And he says, I think about this, and I think of the creation of the planet and how it all happened in upheaval and chaos and confusion, you know? And why would change in my life be any different? Right? Why would growth for me be any different? Why would growth not be chaos? And you're gonna get that in recovery, man. So I'm in chaos right now, and I'm in confusion, and I'm in upheaval, and it's a beautiful place to be, folks. Because I am clean as hell today. You know? And I am living this program in every area of our life. Let me talk to this. I have been going all over the place today, but let me get back to this for a minute. If you want what we have to offer, that speaks to our third tradition, because the door is open for you. Okay? You are welcome here. Whether you're using, still, or you're clean, you have a desire to stop using. And that's it. And you want what we have to offer, and you're welcome here. But there's a second part to that. And are willing to make the effort to get it. What is our message? Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. And that is all we have to give. All we have to give is 12 simple steps, folks. And our willingness is an action word. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you. Yesterday, I took a Greyhound. I don't know if I'll have time to tell this story. I took a Greyhound here. I was supposed to have a car. It became kind of a thing. The car didn't work out. God showed up, something else happened, and I hopped on a Greyhound yesterday and came here. But I had to cross the border to get here, right? And I'm lucky today because I don't have a record as an adult, and what I have is a little book about this big, like it's a little thing called a passport, and you have to show that at the border, and then they ask you a bunch of questions, and they're like, welcome to the United States of America. They let me in again, but they let you in on a caveat, right? You have 6 months. If you're still here in 6 months, we're gonna get you and get you the hell out. Okay? You can hang out for a while. You can hang out for a while. But at one point, if you're gonna stay here and benefit from anything that this place has to offer, you'd better start applying for residency. What's residency in Narcotics Anonymous? These are the principles that made our recovery possible. This is not therapy. This is not treatment. You know, I see nothing wrong with that, but what we have to offer as a fellowship and what we do here is work the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. I was going to go into this story. I'll do it real quick. Anyways, I came on this trip, and you know, thank you for you guys for allowing me to be here. And so we got this all organized, we got the flights all booked, and then I'm like, well, it's easier for me to land in Montreal and just get a car to go across, but it turns out I get off the plane, I get in on a shuttle to go to the rental place, and the guy goes, I can't leave the province of Quebec. At this point, there was a few things happening in the world, and I'm a little bit of a political junkie, so I've been up for about 36 hours. I've been on a flight. I got a little upset. I got a little upset with Mr. Behind the Counter. And the guy next to me had the same problem, and he was a little upset with Mr. Behind the Counter. And I might have gotten a little loud. And then the guy's like, you still want the car? I'm like, fuck no. And then I get Lisa on the phone, and I'm still sitting in the waiting room. And I'm on the phone with Lisa, and the guy's like, say 6 o'clock, we're closing. And then the other guy's still at the counter, and of course, here I am, and I'm on with Lisa. I'm 36 hours with no sleep, and I'm talking to Lisa on the phone, trying to figure out what's going on. And the guy's talking to me from the counter, and he goes, hey, it's 6 o'clock, you need to get out, or we'll get you out. And of course, the punk salute came out. And he wasn't too pleased with that. And we're in a situation here. I have no car. I am powerless. Wow. Well, what happened is with my little behavior outburst, I became the victim of my decisions. It wasn't a fun situation because he dragged me out. I have a cane. He dragged me out on my ass with Lisa on the phone. She heard everything. Okay. So I'm powerless at this point, and I'm in a bit of shit, and my life just got a little bit unmanageable. Because I'm on the curve, the shuttle won't take me back because at this point they want nothing to do with me. And I'm on the side, and Lisa, and I'm freaking out at this point. And Lisa goes, Martin, let's say the Serenity Prayer together. So over the phone, we said the Serenity Prayer. And I hung out with, I said, Lisa, I'll call you back in a little bit. Let me just get back to the airport. I was calming down a bit. And Mr. that was at the counter, he got his car. He comes up to me, and I just hung up with Lisa, and she goes, hey, man, you want to ride back to the airport? We'll drop you off there. God showed up. Live these steps in every area of your life. God showed up. But I got work to do now. This is an inventory to take. My behavior wasn't great. There's an inventory to take, as in, we fucked this up. We did it wrong. We didn't read the fine print on the rental contract that these cars could not leave Quebec. You know? We messed it up. We have to deal with a refund right now. There's all kinds of stuff, you know? But all of a sudden, we were... And I become a victim of my decisions, man. This is a mental illness. Where first we're, you know, the drugs is the last of our problems, man. If you're new here, surprise. It's the last of our problem. Because I'm 28 years clean, and that was a day ago, dude. That was a day ago. We are not spiritual giants when we stand behind these podiums. We do what we can. The only thing I can do different right now is I can admit that I messed this up pretty good. But at the end of the day, I'd crossed this continent a few times on a Greyhound bus when I was using, and I'm like, why the hell am I not taking the bus from Montreal to Burlington? There has to be a bus. I took a bus. It took 2 hours. It was like the super easy ride. And I'm like, why was this so freaking complicated? I know. Next time I come to Burlington, I'll take a bus. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. If you're sitting here and you have over 6 months clean and you don't have a sponsor and you're not working your steps, why the hell are you here? Old school. If you have a sponsor and you worked your steps and you're not involved in your home group and you're not involved in your area or you're not doing H&I or you're not doing PR or you're not speaking at meetings, why the hell are you here? If that hurts, call your sponsor. I'm almost done. I learned something at this convention about 15 years ago, and I want to share it with you. I was sitting at this convention after the main speaker, and I had gone to another meeting, and we were around in the circle, and we were doing the Just for Today reading, and there was a guy that was mumbling things next to me as we were doing the readings, and I turned to him, big guy from New York, big black dude. I said, what are you mumbling? And he taught me something that day. Just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Where do I focus my thoughts on recovery? I do it at meetings. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. What's that guy called? That's my sponsor. Meeting sponsorship. I will have a program and I will try to follow it the best of my ability. Dead center in the middle of my wheel is my steps and traditions. I will try to get a better perspective on my life. If that one's confusing to you, let me simplify it for you. When I get a better perspective on my life and I notice my life has changed, I get grateful. Gratitude in action is called service. Meetings, sponsorships, steps and traditions, service. Our last one is I will be with my new associations people are using. That's called fellowship. I can't stay clean on only one of these things. There's five spokes in my wheel, and if any of these spokes isn't there, my wheel gets wonky. Right? So I learned that here at 10 years clean. We always learn shit, and I'm grateful for that guy because it changed things. I wanted to end on that. There's one thing I got to do. Shay, where are you? I'm doing it. For you. Recovery is an awesome thing. I'll just say this, I've got really lucky in life, and you know, we all have what's cool is when we do our fourth step, we do talk about our defects and our liabilities, but we also talk about our assets. One of the assets I discovered in life, and you guys heard me up here, I'm pretty good at talking. I'm also pretty good at writing. So a few years ago, I got into spoken word poetry, and I wrote a piece after my mom died. And I want to read it, because it's for, because Shay told me. I'll end with this, and I think you'll understand why I'm reading this. This is for the newcomer, sitting in this own corner, sinking in his own darkness. This is for the down, the depressed, the prescription pill poppers, the self-medicators, and the fornicators. This is for the 16-year-old girl that's just a little too big to fit in her prom dress, and the guy three lockers down that have loved her since grade school but is still too afraid to ask her out. This is for the man that could have been, should have been, but never even came close. This is for the woman with a blade at her wrist and her husband with a gun in his mouth because if I can't come to terms with, I have fallen out of love with you. I'm going to ask one thing for you from you this weekend. find your soul. Before the darkness rots you from the heart out, find your soul. If you have none to spare, find it out there, because spirit is everywhere, and everyone needs that thing in their life that lights his or her ass up, and you need to find your soul. Find what drives you, find your own message to share, find it where you will, earth, air, water, fire. Go climb a mountain, knit a fucking sweater, but find that one thing that grounds you into a reality of self. Find your soul and be your own person. Find your own version of God and be an anchor in your own life. Know in the deepest recesses of your heart that you have nothing to prove to the world, and make sure that your choices are yours and yours alone, and that you can stand behind them, that like the strong, real, courageous person that you are. Find your soul. Find your soul and step up to who you are. Nerd, athlete, poet, musician, late night, leather-clad, night rocker, hoodie-wearing, hip-hop popper. Be that person and be proud. Arrest the ass-kicking that you allowed the world to deliver. You never deserved it, no matter what mom, dad, or Mr. Smith in gym class might have told you. You don't no longer have to live that shit that you learned, believed, and became. You can write your own book and be your own story, and if you have found your soul, it will be an epic. Because at the end of the day, in that last microsecond, when I draw my last breath, I will be alone. No matter how many family members, how many lovers are beside me holding my hand, I will be alone, and I will need to know my soul. And I want to make damn sure today that when that day comes, whether it's tomorrow or in 100 years, that the answer to whether or not my life was truly my own is an undeniable resounding yes. And that will only be true if I've replaced the substance with my essence, and if I made that the meat on my bones and the blood in my veins. But at the end of the day, this isn't about me. Or him, or her, or they, or mom, or dad, or Mr. Smith in this class. This is about you, the newcomer, sitting in his own corner, sinking in his own darkness. All of this today, all of this weekend is about you. And we're here for you. And we're here to help you find your spirit, help you uncover your true self, and to learn to love their soul. I'm Martin, I'm an addict. Thank you.
Thank you.